The last time, we left off with one last item to finish up from that somewhat complicated sugya. So to review very, very briefly, the Gemara had started out by suggesting that the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim as to whether all tzlamim were prohibited. If you find a tzelim, you assume that it was worshipped, or no, you assume only, the Chachamim say, only if the tzelim holds in its hand one of several objects. So the Gemara presented the machlokas Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim as follows: whether chayshinan lemiuta. Rabbi Meir is choshesh, as Tosef says, for a miut she'eno matzoi. So it happens to be in Rabbi Meir's town they used to worship all tzlamim at least once a year, and Rabbi Meir therefore was concerned there'd be some other town that happened too, and therefore he was concerned about the miut, and he said that all tzlamim were prohibited. And the Chachamim were not choshesh lemiut, and therefore, since that was highly unusual to have a town whose practice that every tzlamim was worshipped once a year, so there was no reason to make a gzeira. The Gemara continues with a statement seeming qualifying the way most Rishonim understand the Chachamim Shita. And Rabbi Yehuda quotes in the name of Shmuel that specifically the prohibition is with respect to an andarti. An andarti was a statue of a king, which the way everybody but Rabbi Yehuda understands was per primary purpose might have been for worship under certain contexts. So there's an andarti shel malachim, and that's what the Chachamim presumably prohibited if it's holding one of these objects in its hands. And then Rabbi Bar Chana quotes Rabbi Yochanan on the bottom line is saying uva omdim al pesach ledinu shaninu, only if it's standing at the city gates. So the way, let's say, the Rif read was as follows. The Rif and a whole bunch of Rishonim understood that Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan were not arguing, and they were both qualifying and explaining the Chachamim Shita. And in combination with the Gemara and the Amar Aleph, which draws a distinction between cities versus small towns, they would reach the following conclusion. Presumably, in a small town, all tzlamim are asurim. They don't have enough money in the municipal budget to have tzlamim just for decorative purposes. The money you have available must be made for tzlamim to be worshipped. If you're in a city, so there's a bigger budget. So there, you don't assume a tzelem is worship, unless it happens to be an andarti shel melech and standing on Pesach HaMedina. In other words, one qualifies the other further. That was how most Rishonim understood. But if you look at the Rambam, let's just read the Rambam very quickly again on top of the Xerox. The Rambam writes that Suro she'asam av ovde kochavim, it's the first source, Linoi, mutarim. If images are made by idolaters for beauty, for aesthetic purposes, not for worship, mutarim b'hana, you're allowed to get hana from them. Vitsuro she'asam lavodas kochavim, and images that were made for worship, asurim, are prohibited b'hana. That's one, and the assumption, of course, is that they were worshipped. Ketzad, kol atzura sanimtzaim bikfarim asurim bana. Any images that are found, any psalim that are found in the small towns are asur bana. Mipnei shechaskasan shalavodas kochavim basurim. We assume they were used for worship purposes. V'hanim tzos b'medina, those that are found in cities. Im hayu omdim al pesach ha-medina, if they're standing at the city gate. V'haya biyara tzura, tzuras makel o tzipar o kadur, those are the three in the Mishnah. And then, in addition, the bat, the bird, and the ball. O sayif o atara vitabas, the sword, the crown, or a ring. That's the Gemara is going to add. We haven't seen that yet. Cheskaso shulavodas kochavim basabana. Then you assume, if it's holding one of these objects, and it's omen apesach hamedina, so then you assume that it's worshipped. V'imla harehu becheskas lenoi umotar. Otherwise, you assume that it was made for aesthetic purposes, and therefore it is permitted. So what's the important detail that the Rambam leaves out? He leaves out one crucial detail. The Andarti Shel Malachim. Why did he say, it should, according to the Gemara, if you read the sequence, it should be those things that are also when they're not Bikfarim, are Andarti Shel Malachim, Omer HaPesach Medina, holding one of these six objects in his hand. But the Rambam leaves out the detail of Andarti. So we pointed out already, the Gra noted that the Rambam understood. He suggested a slightly different gears in the Gemara. And the gears of the Gra suggested, if you look at the bottom line, was not Amar Rav Chana Rabbi Yochanan, but Rabba Bar Chana Amar Rabbi Yochanan. In other words, when you take out that first Amar, so instead of being an additive, instead of being an additional statement, it's an arguing statement. In other words, if Amora says X, and then the Gemara says Amar Shmuel, then Shmuel's not arguing, Shmuel's adding, Shmuel's talking about something else. But if it says Shmuel Amar, but Shmuel, then it means Shmuel says. Shmuel disagrees with what came before, and it reflects a different opinion. Anyway, so that's what the Gra had said. So the Rambam, the Beis Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Karo, writes the following. It's the second source. V'ha Rambam hishmit ha'de andarti. The Rambam left out andarti. V'nire, it would appear, shlo hutzrach las kira. He didn't bother to mention it or didn't need to mention it. D'cheven de'ena machalik ben tzura l'tzura. Since he doesn't distinguish between one type of minhag and another, elatola hakoba omed al pesach medina v'yesh b'yado makel, the Rambam has simply two criteria. It's omed al pesach medina and it's holding one of these objects. Therefore, memela hava andarti b'chlal. Then, memela, of course, amongst any images, is an andarti. But the truth is that doesn't really answer the question. It doesn't answer the question. Because our question was not why the Rambam doesn't mention Andarti, and that we're going to walk away thinking, therefore, that Andarti is permissible. Our question is, the Gemara severely qualifies or limits the Isser of the Chachamim to cases when that statue is an Andarti of Pesach Medina. I presume that it's understood. Kahaneman and Tversky have a description for this. When they ask people, they give a description of someone who's a feminist, and they list a number of things about this person, and they say, what are the probabilities that this person is a feminist, and what are the probabilities that this person is a lawyer and a feminist? Okay, and they've given a whole bunch of details describing the person, and 80 to 90% of the people say the most likely possibility is that they're a lawyer and a feminist, which of course is absurd, because of course you pick the one that's a feminist, because every lawyer and a feminist is also a feminist. There's apparently a common new fallacy. I forget what it's called. Marshall, you might remember what they call this. It's unbelievable. So the same thing is true here. That's not a kash on the Rambam. I mean, yeah, if the Rambam wanted to say that Andarti Shom Alachem is Asur, he did a good job. We got that. Andarti and every single tzura that's Omer HaPesach Medina is included. The kash on the Rambam is, if you read the Gemara the way most Rishonim read it, the Gemara is severely limiting the Chachamim's prohibition. So the Rambam, by omitting Andarti, is expanding the prohibition to include all images Omer HaPesach Medina with things in their hand, not just Andarti Shem Alachim, Al Pesach Medina with images in their with certain objects in their hand. So the Beis Yosef doesn't really answering the question. If he wanted to say what the Gross says, yes, the Rambam severely the Rambam expands the prohibition greatly because he doesn't make a distinction between tzura l'tzura. The Gross says because he read Rabbi Yochanan as arguing on Shmuel, not building on Shmuel. Fine, and then he just says v'zeh nireh. The Beis Yosef is referring to the Tur here. The Tur also left out the word Andarti, so he says probably the Tur was thinking like the Rambam as well. So it's a little bit odd. But then he goes on to quote Rabbeinu Yerucham. Rabbeinu Yerucham was the Talmud of the Rush. I'm not going to read the entire passage in between, but he writes at the end the following, where I italicized. V'nire, shesover Rabbeinu Yerucham, she'avo pi shlo hisker Andarti, even though the Rambam did not mention Andarti, the Chlav Omer HaPesach HaMedinahu. It's understood when the Rambam says that you have a Tzura that's Omer HaPesach HaMedina, that means Andarti. Why? Distam Omer HaPesach HaMedina, Eino Ela Andarti. Now that, so then basically he's saying the Rambam omitted it, the way the Beis Yosef understands Rabbeinu Yerucham, is the Rambam omitted it because he didn't really have to say it. Because you know what? What statues did they put at the entrance to the city gates? Andarti Shem Alachem, of course. So, It's a little bit odd methodologically. I don't know. I'm not sufficiently expert in the practices of Roman idolatry to determine, or Greco-Roman idolatry to decide what was the typical statue that was Omer HaPesach HaMedina. Was it an Andarti or not? But it is odd from a methodological perspective if Rabbeinu Yerucham is correct, because the Rambam tends not to leave out things that the Gemara mentions that he's paskani like. In other words, even if it were redundant on some level, even if you wanted to make that argument, it's odd for the Rambam to leave out. If you're paskening that way, you know, does the Rambam believe that in the case where you had a non-Andarti, Omer HaPesach HaMedina, holding one of these objects, it would be Mutabana, because it's not an Andarti? The Rambam should have said so once the Gemara said so as well. The argument from silence in the Rambam is a general, when the Rambam omits, the Rambam doesn't talk about it then. You can only make the argument from silence about the Rambam's position is if the Gemara mentions this then and the Rambam omits it, right? The Rambam basically did a digest of the Bavli and the Yushalmi and the Midrash Halacha. So, but particularly the Bavli, if there's a statement that the Rambam is talking about the issue and he leaves out a statement, he presumably leaves it out for a reason. Not just the Mistama that an Andarti, and most statues that stand on Pesach HaMedina happen to be an Andarti. It doesn't sound unreasonable to me, by the way, to argue that most statues standing at the entrance to the city gates are going to glorify its ruler, but nonetheless it's very odd, given that the Gemara presents it as two statements, for the Rambam to omit it. Marshall?
By the time the Beis Yosef is being written, we have 1,500 years of written tradition where people are being medayak on the tiniest things in the world, including the absence or presence of a single letter, let alone a single word. And we have...
Not in rabbinic literature. Not on letters and barely on words, unless it's compelled. I don't think, you know, that's
a... The whole nature of the Gemara's argument, looking back at the Mishnah, is trying to make the Yukim over changes in text and kirsas and the like. I'm not even done yet.
Okay.
Rambam is writing more than 1,000 years, right, essentially removed from the height of the Roman era. This just has no methodological integrity at all. They just have to be just sort of guessing... he left that word because it was obvious both to him and to the later reader. It just seems
a few comments there. You can't accuse the Beis Yosef. He's trying to explain Rabbeinu Yerucham. You can accuse Rabbeinu Yerucham if the Beis Yosef is correct. But he didn't leave out a word. The Rambam left out a statement, essentially. Right? A statement that it's not as if the Rambam doesn't know the Sugya or is ignoring the Sugya, because he quotes the other line. So there has to be a reason he left it out. Right. I believe that the Gruz reading, which I think is a more compelling reading. Yeah. Yes, I believe that's the case. What's a little frustrating, though, is you go to the Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber writes the last paragraph, Kol atzlamim shel avodas kochavim hanim tza'im bikfarim asurim. D'stama l'shem avodas kochavim nasur. That's not a chiddush, right? In other words, this is consistent. You find a tzelem in the small towns, you assume it to be asur. V'anim tza'im bakracha mutarim, divada linoi nasu. Ela im kein omdim al pesach medina v'haya b'yat hatzura, and list the objects. So how does the Mechaber paskim? Exactly like the Rambam. What's frustrating is, of course, there's one very important crucial point missing. Is he holding like what he wrote in the Beis Yosef, or the way he understood Rabbeinu Yerucham? He doesn't tell you, he doesn't give any indication, now that he's given two possibilities of how to understand, that we simply, is Andarti not a requirement, or is Andarti just assumed he's left it out? So it's kind of, it's a little bit frustrating. It's just, if you look in the parentheses, the Mechaber did not put in the sources. The sources in parentheses were put in by somebody later. Lishon Rambam Perek Zayim Hilchos Avodas Kochavim. That's right, it's still Rambam's language, but that doesn't tell us what the Rambam holds. Okay.
And why does that matter?
I mean, what's that?
He's just saying, whatever you find, whether it's a statue of me or a statue
of but it matters the fact, but you're taking a stand on that. Now, according to, if Rabbeinu Yerucham
is... That's what it says in the Shulchan. I mean, I'm not that sad.
He does the same thing the Rambam does.
It's different. You're going through and understand the logic. Here he's just poskening.
No, agreed, but the question is, what was his psak? And he's poskening exactly what the Rambam poskens. In other words, it's almost verbatim.
I'm saying something different. I'm saying, pretend you're not a learned person, and you don't know the Gemara and everything like that, and the only source you have is the Shulchan Aruch. It's very obvious that whatever you find at Petach Medina, you can worship.
So here I step back and remind you of something that I mentioned. I actually heard Rav Sabato and Malei Adumim mention this in a shir, I think in a Mesilas Yesharim shir, actually. Which is that Yosef Karo, when he wrote the Shulchan Aruch, he wrote it as the crib notes. He intended people to chazer it once every 30 days, to read through the entire Shulchan Aruch. Right. So the point is, he's not assuming, the Beis Yosef, Rav Yosef Karo is not assuming that you haven't read the Beis Yosef. I would say there is virtually not a time where the conclusion in the Shulchan Aruch argues on what appears to be the conclusion of the Beis Yosef. It's not true never, but almost never. So it is, by the way, one of the critiques. There was a lot of opposition. The Marshal, the Yamshel Shlomo, Rav Shlomo Luria, was very opposed to the project, I think, of the Shulchan Aruch. And I don't know if this was his critique or was other people's critique, is that when you have a book like the Shulchan Aruch, people open up the Shulchan Aruch and they don't look at the sources and they misunderstand things. So I agree with you. If all you read is the Shulchan Aruch, you will reach a certain conclusion. But if you read the Beis Yosef, then it's not entirely clear what the Mechaber said. That's my point. So that's what's a little frustrating. You would expect him to tip his hand, but he doesn't. Does he see this as the way you said, that the person who just reading the Shulchan Aruch is expansive, or he's just assuming that Mistama, like Rabbeinu Yerucham, that a tzur that's omen al Pesach Hamdina is going to be an Andarti. So what if it happens to be this place they put a non-Andarti Pesach Hamdina?
That's more a question for you. When he's writing the Shulchan Aruch and he's summarizing the Beit Yosef, does he usually put that in? I mean, I've never...
The tricky part here is, as opposed to choosing between two opinions in the din, he's quoting the din from the Rambam straight. And now the question is two interpretations in what the Rambam said. So normally, if we're machlokes, the Rambam and the Rashba, you can tell from how he quotes in the Shulchan Aruch. Firstly, he'll have told you, he doesn't tell you here in the Beis Yosef, he doesn't say, ha-hachi nakinan, this is the way we hold. Because he told them like the Rambam. The only question is what the Rambam means. And when it comes to the Shulchan Aruch, in this case, you can't tell. If it were machlokes, the Rambam and the Rashba, in a broader, if he had quoted the machlokes, the Rambam here in Rabbeinu Tam, that we read in Tosfos, it would be amply clear, however he would formulate in the Shulchan Aruch, which direction he was heading. That's the difficulty. Okay, then he said, this is, I think, that's the end of this sugya, but this, I think, is a wonderful example, both starting from the Gemara and methodologically in halacha, of how psak halacha is done, and why it is actually so complicated. I had yesterday, I was walking back from shul, and I had a young man who had been traveling, I think, in South America with some of his friends, and they had shailas about gvina sakum. So, and they Googled to find out, well, why is cheese prohibited? Right? So I think that pretty much everybody in this room could have taught him a little bit about cheese prohibited. Getting the answer from Google, something about rennet really doesn't give you the full picture of the sugya and the machlokas are shown in the Shulchan Aruch. So it's one of those difficulties, but the problem is that learning halacha requires learning from the ground up. But okay.
So we did internet but no phone. We couldn't call the rabbi.
I didn't ask him that question.
Cheaper. Time change.
I discovered that Chile is apparently 2 hours ahead of us. So not as much as Israel. I find that I didn't go look at the map yet. But okay, fine. All right, so now we are back to the Gemara on Taf Mem Aleph, Amud Aleph. The Gemara, starting with the first set of two dots. The Chachamim mentioned three items in the Mishnah. V'chachamim omrim einam asurim. So the first one is makel. Shirode atzmo tachas kol olam kulo kimakel. So the word atzmo here is a euphemism. Roda means literally to rule over with force, to subjugate is a good word. So the symbol of the staff is that it subjugates itself underneath, meaning under the domain of the entire world, like a rod. It means it subjugates the world underneath it, like it's holding a rod. But euphemistically speaking, so it's, you know, just as the Gemara will say on occasion, that if not for a certain thing, Elmalei X, lo nishtayer misoneim shel Yisrael sarid v'palit, there would not have been a single survivor from the enemies of the Jewish people. And really it means there wouldn't have been a survivor from the Jewish people. But Chazal sort of talked that way. So in this case, they don't want to refer to the world actually being subjugated to Avodah Zarah. Instead, the Avodah Zarah subjugates itself. So that's what the symbol of a rod is. We understand. Think about the sharvit of a king. Next.
Can you be time sensitive? In other words, let's say symbols change over time.
I think so. I think that's a double question.
But I'm saying even, I'm not talking about on the positive side, let's say just adding things, but on the negative side, the ball had no meaning today.
What's that? Correct. I there's no question. I think that this is a case. Again, this is the larger halacha question. When certain things change, does the halacha change or not? There is no gzeira, I don't believe, in this case, one could differ, but I don't think there's a gzeiras chachamim that you have to be concerned. Firstly, it's probably not a gzeira d'rabbanon. The assumption here is that when you have such a statue holding such an object, it's not a din d'rabbanon. It's a chazaka, which is a d'oraisa principle that this object is worshipped. In other words, it's a probability question. So, therefore, there's a deep irony, actually. I pointed this in a totally different area. I would say in my community, they do in this community too, many of us shower on Yom Tov. Now, the question of whether you can take a shower in hot water, not using hot water, but actually a hot shower. So everybody, at least my Rebbe Rosh Hechter assumes, you can use the hot water, but you maybe shouldn't take a hot shower, only a warm shower. Why? So the question is, the Mishnah assumes you're not allowed to bathe your entire body in hot water on Yom Tov. There's a machlokas Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai about whether you can even heat water to wash your hands, feet, and face. Beis Hillel says yes, but it's pretty clear you can't bathe your entire body. Why not? After all, if you can bathe your hands, feet, and face, why is the rest of the body different? So here there's a basic machlokas harishonim. The Bali HaTosfos claim that the prohibition of the Mishnah is an Isser Doraisa. What's the Isser? So on Yom Tov, you're allowed to make whatever food you want. But not only are you allowed to make whatever food you want, you're also allowed to do any malacha that would be permitted for food, you can use for other needs of Yom Tov. So if you can light a fire, let's say, to cook food, then you can light a fire to keep yourself warm. There is one exception in principle, however. You're only allowed to do things that are non-food if it's what's called shave l'chol nefesh. It has to be something that most people would typically use. So the example the Gemara gives that is not shave l'chol nefesh is mugmar, these fancy spices that only wealthy people, mefunakim, you know, would use. So you would burn it, the incense in the house, so it would smell nice. Most people didn't do this. So since it's not food, and it's only on the basis of mitoch, since you're allowed to burn stuff for food, you can use fire for other purposes. So if it's not a shave l'chol nefesh, it's prohibited. Okay, the Baal Ne'eh Tosfos say that bathing your entire body in hot water, you know, is not a davar hashava l'chol nefesh, and therefore it's prohibited on Yom Tov. The Ramban says, what are you talking about? Of course it's a davar hashava l'chol nefesh. The Ramban says, you know why you're not allowed to bathe your entire body in hot water on Yom Tov? Because it has to do with a gzeira out of Shabbos. On Shabbos, even if the water was heated from before Shabbos, the Chachamim prohibited bathing your entire body on Shabbos. It was called gzeiras habalanim, because the bathhouse attendants would heat the water on Shabbos, but say that they heated the water before Shabbos, therefore the Chachamim banned bathing one's entire body in hot water on Shabbos, even if the water was heated from before Shabbos. And for some reason, it's a little odd, but the gzeira was a very broad gzeira and included Yom Tov as well. So now the question is, comes the year 2017, and now it is a unpleasant Shavuos, and I would like to take a shower. So Rosh Echter says the following. He says, if you hold like the Baal Ne'eh Tosfos, you can take a hot shower. Not a problem. Why? Because today, it is a davar shel nefesh. At least in our society, most people bathe in hot water every day. Okay? Then that may not be true for the high school males, but the rest of the world, okay? Your mother will make sure that at some point you get there. Okay, so fine. So that's called the davar hashava l'chol nefesh. So it turns out, according to Tosos, it was an issur d'oraisa at the time in the Mishnah, now it's mutar. But according to the Ramban, it doesn't matter that today we don't go to bathhouses. The gzeiras habalanim is technically still in effect, and you're not allowed to bathe your entire body in hot water that was heated before Shabbos, and similarly holds on Yom Tov. So ironically, what was and is only an issur d'rabbanan remains in force. Now, Rosh Echter says, you can use the hot water so that the shower is not cold. But the gzeiras habalanim was not bathing in hot water. It's not that there's no issur in heating up water on Yom Tov for whatever needs you have. But obviously, if the only purpose in heating it up is to take a hot shower, well, that might be prohibited because of Gzeirat Rabbanan. But if you're using the hot water, and you don't, you know, it's not all on the cold side, it's way in the middle, so that it's not uncomfortable, and you're not bathing in hot water, you're not showering in hot water, so you don't violate Gzeirat Rabbanan, and it's mutter. Anyway, so it turns out very often, when you're talking about things that are d'oraisa prohibitions, but with a sort of tied to a certain definition of reality, it often is more lenient, bisman hazeh, than if you're dealing with the rabbinic prohibition, right? Because there is no gzeira d'rabbanan about davar she'eino shel nefesh. The Torah says you can do this on Yom Tov, you can't do that on Yom Tov. Therefore, it would turn out that today the realia has changed, and the halacha doesn't change. It's applied in light of a different realia. So in this case, I would argue that it wasn't a gzeira d'rabbanan on these objects. The Chachamim just pointed out that these objects are right a chazaka, a presumption that these Tzlamim were worshipped. And if in our day and age, so today, if they hold a football, let's say, that's a sign that it's worshipped. Okay, but if they're holding a hockey stick, it's not. So then the stick would not be, wouldn't be usher, and the football would be usher. Marshall.
But why wouldn't the change in the realia that there are no longer bathhouse attendants anywhere heating up water be enough so that there's around? Like if all of a sudden discovered that by drilling down 4 feet, everybody has a hot spring under their house, the water just comes out free from the ground. You wouldn't say, oh, we're nervous that attendants might heat it up, so you still can't use it. So the fact that now we have hot water heaters.
Well, firstly, they prohibited Chametz Feria anyway. Okay. So, but you're pointing to the larger question,
that's
which is
question also.
I know. So that that's a larger question, which I think we've spoken about a little bit, and I think I've sort of given my response, which is, it's a difficult question, but the answer is that when you're dealing with rabbinic legislation, the only way to undo it is to have a uniform policy across the Klal Yisrael, which you can't have because we don't have a Sanhedrin, and which I pointed out, we also don't really want a Sanhedrin, right? Because we like our autonomy. But the cost of that autonomy is that we're stuck with these gerus. Yes, the truth is, on the surface, it's almost illogical because you'd expect to be more machmir on things that are deraisa and more lenient on things that are...
I apologize. That's actually not my point.
Or changeability, if you want to call it.
My point's a little bit different, which is, I'm not sure I understand the difference in what you call the realia. The reason for the gzeira is a fact.
Correct.
No longer exists in the modern time.
Correct. But as in, if you think about, I think, in any legislation, right, in any legislation in this country as well, if you break the law, even if the reason is batel, okay, if the law is still on the books, they can arrest you for that, and they can prosecute you for that, even though they're about to repeal the law. Right? Notice they can do such a thing. In this sense, it's the same thing. In other words, the law's on the books, it is prohibited. Right? Yes, it's true, the reason is no longer relevant, so if there were Sanhedrin today, they certainly would not make this gezeira, and you presume they would probably also permit the gezeira, but there isn't. So it creates its own kind of problems, but that is still, I think, an accurate portrayal of where halacha is more flexible, where it's less flexible, and it's ironic because it's more flexible on something that once upon a time was a Torah prohibition than on something that, when in the first place, was only a rabbinic prohibition. Yeah, it's a kasha, right? It's a kasha. It's without a good answer.
On Shabbos, taking pills.
That's it, right? That's another example, right? The same thing with medicine on Shabbos, right? Most of us do not grind up. I mean, somebody does, but you don't grind up spices in your house on Shabbos. And nonetheless, the gzeiros refuah, which again, what do poskim do? Poskim tend to narrow the gzeiros refuah, but they never do away with the gzeiros refuah because you can't, because the gzeiros is on the books. So sometimes interpretation does sort of narrow it down. If you think about what has happened here, what is this particular psak halacha permitting you to take sort of a lukewarm shower, but not a hot shower? It has in effect narrowed the effect of the prohibition, right? In other words, we've taken the prohibition and we've said, okay, the gzeres habalanim has to be chamin, because the Gemara does distinguish between chamin and sonein. Right? Sonein, certainly based upon the gzeres, was permissible. So now, and it's not an unreasonable argument, the answer is chamin. Well, chamin is yad soledes behem. It has to be really pretty hot. That's, you know, people go into a bath, has to really have a hot bath and so on. So basically, you could argue this is not even narrowing the gzeres, this is very clear in the first place, but we've effectively gone almost to the same place, but the gzeres still remains in effect. Okay, fine. So now, tzipor, a bird, shetofeses atzmo tachas kala olam kulo kitzipor. Okay, again, it's, I guess, a bird that soars above the earth, so it has sort of a domain or something like that. I would imagine, I know very little about Greek mythology, but I'm willing to bet you that this bird in the hand represents with some Greek god or something like that, or a Greek or Roman god, I'm sure, you know, some winged creature would be my bet. That's, in other words, that's probably where it came from, and the assumption is that it was Navad. Okay, and then, finally, Kadur. Shetofes es atzmo tachas kolam kulo ki kadur. And here again, I think really what this means is that the world is a sphere, and it's holding, it's got the whole world in its hands. Okay, fine. Tana. We have a common Torah on the Mishnah, in addition to the Mishnah, hosifu aleim sayef atara v'tabas. Sayef, now why did the Mishnah not include these things? So the Gemara says, sayef meikara savor listem biyama. It was just a symbol of robbers. Okay, but later, so savor shahori gesatzmo tachas kolam kulo. Okay, fine. Atara, the crown. I don't know, I would have thought, I suspect that Torah here is like a
wreath.
A wreath, yeah. Atara meikara savor gedil kalile ba'alma. It's just, it makes crowns or something like that. However, lebesof savor katar lamelech. It was like a crown for a king. And finally, tabas meikar savor ishtaima da'alma. It's just like a dignitary, a bureaucrat, we would say, whose job is to stamp things. Lebesof savor shechose mes atzmo tachas kolom kulo lemisa. Think about our sort of image on Yom HaNorayim, right? That what God does on the Yom HaDin is v'chose, v'choseim, and so on. So.
Is there a reason why they don't ask the pagans themselves if this is an Avodah Zarah or not?
So they're in Babel.
They're almost like acting like anthropologists who don't want to contaminate what they're looking at and speak to the natives.
So I think the answer is that probably this is taking place, most of this discussion is taking place in Babel. I don't know that, I'm not sure, I could check, but I don't think the Yushalmi, I'd be surprised if the Yushalmi, I'll tell you in a second, does the Yushalmi even have...
How are you checking this?
No, in general.
I'll just answer that. The way I'll know whether the Yushalmi has is that there's a commentary in the back called the Yefeinayim, whose job is to point out parallels between the Babel and the Yushalmi. He may or may not say anything here, because if it's the same material on the same sugi in the Yushalmi, without any difference, he doesn't comment. But if the material in the Yushalmi is found somewhere else, he'll tell you, look there, because you wouldn't know that if I wanted to have a Yushalmi, I would open that up. So in the Yefeinayim, he points out parallels elsewhere in rabbinic literature that are either if it's the Yushalmi is different than the Mavli, or if it's somewhere else where the parallel material is found. So I'm sorry. So my suspicion is that this is a very uniquely Bavli thing. From an Aleph. Nope, I take that back. He says, Hachinami bi Yushalmi. Two words. So the question is, whether or not the Yushalmi I'd have to look in the Yerushalmi to see how they handle it. I'm willing to bet that the rest of the piece, after Tana Hosif Aleim, the Yerushalmi doesn't have the same, what did they think originally, what did they think later? But your question's still a good question, right?
Or maybe they're saying, if there is no one around to ask, what's the status of this, what's the status of this?
The problem is that there's no one around to ask, so why did they change their mind after, in other words, you're just sitting around in the Medrash guessing?
It was probably observational.
Well, the problem is, but not in Bavel. That's the point. In Eretz Yisrael, I would agree it's probably observational, but then the question of the Bavli remains, fundamentally, what do you mean, Hosifu Aleihem? Unless you read it as, it's not that they added a later Gzeira or a later decree, the Mishnah wasn't a comprehensive list. And the Brice is saying, oh, by the way, everybody understands, these are three examples of things, here are three other examples. But the Bavli takes it quite literally, Hosifu Aleihem, that they changed their mind. Originally they thought these three things were not included, and then they decide, no, they are.
No, but even in Rav Meir's case, in all the cases, why didn't they simply, they'll see what they're talking about. You know, there's some suffix. Do they not worship this? So Rav Meir said,
So the way the Bavli presents it, it's not a machlokas mitzvahs. Everybody agrees. In Rabbi Meir's town, they used to worship every tzelem once a year.
Right, but the other town.
And there might be another town, and there are other towns, but they're rare. Okay, but you're not always in a position. You find the tzelem, and you don't know the story of that town.
Well, also, what is the Hanukkah constitute? How are they actually using the tzelem anyway?
Well, you can melt it down. Melt it down.
You mean the fifth? Oh,
melt it down.
Okay.
That would be,
or sell it,
right? That would be the other way: melt it or sell it. Okay, fine. So now the Gemara gets to the last opinion. Rabbi Shimon Gamaliel says anything in its hand. Tana afilu tsrar afilu kisem. Even if it's a pebble, even if it's a splinter of wood, that's also boy Ravashi. Tapas biyada tsoamahu. If it's holding excrement in his hands, does that constitute as well? Mi aminan kulo kuleyama zilu baape kitzoa. That everything in its eyes. Is like nothing, like tzoa. Odilma, humihu dezil ba'ape kule alma kitzoa. Or is this somehow a statement about somebody's making fun of the image, it is despised by everybody? That's why you do this. Teiku.
So ask the pagan.
What's that?
Ask the pagan.
So, again, I imagine this was not a common occurrence. If you and I looked at this case, we would have said, you're kidding me, right? They're not going to be worshipping this thing, but, again, it's hard to tell. This is a case you can't ask the pagan. Baal Peor. Chazal say that the way Baal Peor was worshipped was defecating on it. I find that Baal is one of the standard, one of the major biblical the Canaanite deities. I find it hard to believe that Baal Peor that they really worshipped them. Right? Now, it wasn't the live issue for Chazal. Chazal used it to demonstrate that even if you worship an avodah, if the normal way to worship an avodah zarah is by doing something you would normally consider derogatory, it doesn't matter. You're higher for doing that than the avodah zarah. The rule in avodah zarah is there are the four avodos of inside the mikdash, avodos panim. You're chayav on to any avodah zarah, even if it's not normal to worship it that way. Hishtachava, bowing, nisuch, libating, shochet, slaughtering an animal for it, and maktir, and burning something to it. No matter whether it's the derech of that avodah zarah to worship or not, you're chayav misa for doing that. All other forms of worship, if it's the norm for that avodah zarah, you're chayav misa. If not, you only get malchus. So the examples they give is throwing a stone at Marculus, at Mercury, and poor atzmo lipaor, right? Defecating on poor. Now, Mercury, I presume, was an avodah zarah that existed in the time of Chazal. Baal Peor was, I'm pretty sure, long gone. I don't think that Chazal would have known by their time period any Baal worshippers. I can't decide whether it's Chazal. It doesn't really matter, lahalacha, if you have an avodah zarah, that's the normal way to worship. You're chayav misa for doing that. I wonder if that's just Chazal's way of making fun of it. I don't know. But, so again, this seems to be a very odd kind of case. Okay. All right, so now on to the next Mishnah. Hamotze shivrei tzlamim. If someone finds broken tzlamim. So the Mishnah says, Hare elu mutarim. So the simple reading of the Mishnah right now, what inference can be drawn from the first clause in the Mishnah? If you find broken images...
It's got to be the one from the... It's got to be the one that's Asur. From like the...
from the gate to the city. And
excellent observation, which is you read the implication that Shivrei Tzlamim are prohibited. The inference is, but if they were not broken, they would be Aser. Now, if you think so, you have to either here be assuming you're dealing in the kfar in the village, right, and you find Shivrei Tzlamim there, or it's the kind of idol. And it's either everybody in the previous Mishnah, or maybe it's only Rabbi Meir's opinion. The Gemara is going to talk about that later. But the obvious inference you made correctly is that if the Tzlamim weren't broken, they would be Aser. Now, the truth is, when you look at the previous Mishnah, the simplest way, if you read no Gemara, would be to assume it would be Rabbi Meir, because Kol HaTzlamim Asurim, Divrei Rabbi Meir, Matza Shivrei Tzlamim, then they're Mutar. But if you hold like the Chacham in the previous Mishnah, the Eino Aser Ella, the only thing that's prohibited is this one little case, then I might say Shivrei Tzlamim.
Irrelevant.
Right. So you're correct. So you're going to have to say that it's Rabbi Meir's opinion, or it means that specific kind of Tzlamim that the Chachamim prohibited there. Correct. That's the first half of the Mishnah. Then the Mishnah says, Matza Tavnis Yad O Tavnis Regel Harei Elu Asurim Mipnei Shekayotze Bohen Nevad. If you find the image, a hand, a leg, it's Aser, because similar things that are similar to that are in fact worship. So the question is, what does this mean if you find a hand or a leg? It means if you find a hand or a leg broken off of Avodah Zarah?
No, we talked about this.
Right, so we're going to see, the Gemara is going to, right, when you read the Mishnah, you don't realize that. You read the Mishnah, it sounds like, you know, if you find a Stam, a broken idol, okay, you assume it's Motar Bahano. But if you find a Tavin Shiad, people do worship that. Now, let's take a step back for a second. Why are Shivrei Tzlamim permitted? If the Tzelim were, if you're, the assumption is that...
not worshipped.
Okay.
It's not a
Tzelim. They were worshipped.
So what's that?
But they were worshipped.
They were.
So the question is, why are they Motar now?
A goy wouldn't worship it now if it
was
broken.
Right. So there. The first detail that has to just be put out there, and we've alluded to this in the past, is there is a concept of bittul. There is a concept of bittul. Bittul means if a goy has an avodah zarah and he worships it and he decides, I don't like this one anymore. Goodbye, I'm decommissioning you. So the avodah zarah is now mutar bahana.
But is it mutter to also use, I mean, not just the hano, is it used to physically use it?
Yeah. The question is, under what circumstances am I allowed to have a graven image in my home is one question. But is this particular thing, mutter b'hano, let's say it's gold and I'm going to melt it down. If the goy is mevatel the avodah zarah, then I can melt it down and do whatever I want with the gold, pretty much. So, but now the question is, you don't know what happened. Matza shivrei tzlamim. Right, I'll give the example I must have given before is, so let's assume for the moment, I'll take it as the sort of the mainstream assumption, that a church is considered a base of Avodah Zarah. And it's not strictly monotheistic, so the church should be Aser B'hana. Let's say the chapel should be Aser B'hana. Now, what about visiting the cloisters in northern Manhattan? So the truth is, the cloisters is a monastery with a church in it. It was rebuilt from different pieces from whatever places in Europe and made into a museum. Now, I would argue as a Dover Pasher that, of course, it's permissible to go there because when they took it, firstly, most of them were broken already, but even if you assume that just because the church, a particular church, was broken doesn't automatically mean it's batel, when the people took those stones and they moved them to America to make a museum out of it for a branch of the Metropolitan Museum of Art, so that constitutes bittul. It's clear they no longer intend to worship it. The question still remains, what happens if marauders come into town and they destroy the church, right, and they kill all the inhabitants? Does that mean it's batel? Let's say we're Jewish marauders for the moment. I want to say that, because Jews cannot be, the way we paskin, a Jew cannot be mevat the love of the Tzar. Only a goy can be mevat the love of the Tzar. There's a tradition, we'll see, I think it's either in this parak or in the next parak, that David HaMelech, one of his soldiers, is Itai HaGiti, who was a Gentile, and one of the things David needed from Itai was that when they conquered the Philistine idols, Itai, the goy, would be mevat the love of the Tzar. Okay, that was his job. So a new job of what we call a batlan, or a mevatlan. So the point is, you can have bittul, but the question is, just because something is broken, and let's say it broke in an earthquake, does that constitute bittul? If you want to think, I don't think the Rishonim invoked this analogy, that we're going to talk about it, think about a very famous machlokas between Abaye and Rava, what's known as Yeyosh Shalomi Da'as. If I lose an object, so you're obligated, it has a simon, you're obligated to return it to me. But if I lose an object and I have yeyosh, I give up hope of getting it back. So you are not obligated to return it. So one of the ways you typically would have an object, you're not obligated to return it. What happens if I lost an object? And if I knew that I lost the object, I would be miyaish. But I don't know yet. So the question is called Yesh Lo Midas. It means I haven't had Yesh because I don't know that I lost it. If I knew that, you told me now, if Eliona came and said, by the way, you know, you dropped your wallet, you know, in the middle of Times Square, you know, an hour ago, and what my reaction would be is, oh well, hope I didn't have too much value in that wallet. So the question is, does Yesh Lo Midas constitute Yesh? It's one of the six cases, by the way, we pass. It's the famous Yaal Kagam, that's the Yud of Yaal Kagam. We pass in those six cases like Abai, Yesh Lo Midas is not Yesh in that case. So the question is, if you take this Avodah Zarah, presumably if the guy walks into the house as mad, takes his baseball bat and smashes it, takes the baseball bat out of the Avodah Zarah's hands, and smashes the Avodah Zarah, that's called Bittul. But the question is, what if, now, what happens if the guy came into the house and the chandelier fell on the idol and smashed it? Say, Mustama, he's going to take his alabaster Avodah Zarah here and throw it in the garbage and go get a new one, right? He's gonna throw it away, but he doesn't know that it happened yet. He hasn't come home yet. So the question is, if you find Shivrei Tzlamim, what is the assumption that, what if you find Shivrei, I said Shivrei Avodah Zarah right now, what is the assumption that you make? Now, if you're dealing with a Shever, so there's a self element of Safek. If you're dealing with a Tzelem that was broken, you have two things working in your favor. Number one, you don't know for sure that it was worshipped. And number two, even if it was worshipped, maybe the guy was mevatel it. But the question is, what if this were an Avodah Zarah and you found it broken? What are the assumptions that you make there? So that's where the Gemara is going to go with this.
So right, but it's also clear that some Shivrei Tzlamim are worshipped.
Okay, so you could read that line in the Mishnah that says, yes, but asterisk, there's one exception. If the pieces you find are a hand or a leg, so that you cannot assume because they take on a life of their own. Right, correct. So right now, the Gemara is going to read the Mishnah, or one way is going to read the Mishnah differently, but right now you're correct. Let's assume that the exception to the rule is if you find the hand or the leg, somebody could decide, you know what, I'll make that into my Avodah Zarah.
Sorry. A tiny bit off topic, but if there's tribal art that is a tzura of a pagan god,
yeah,
but you know that it was actually made essentially for purchase by tourists, as opposed to being sort of actually made for the purchase of worship, but it is functionally, you know, a fertility god, mm-hmm, you know, balsa wood statue kind of thing. So where does that...
If you know that this object was not worshipped, you can reasonably assume that it was meant, then it's not Aser Bana. There is a question about having something in a Marisayan question, that's for a later discussion, but in terms of, let's say you come into possession of it, you know, your business partner, you know, gives you this as a gift, right? So the answer is it's Mutar Bana. You certainly, to the extent that there's no, let's say, Lifnei Iver, let's say you're selling it to a non-Jew who doesn't worship it, but will display it as art, so then that would be permissible. So the question is a Marisayan question. It's true, by the way, not only with Avodah Zarah. It's a question at some point we're going to talk about images, other images that one is not allowed to make. I know this is shocking, but images of the sun, moon, and the stars, even two dimensions, seem to be prohibited. It seems to be the only thing that's prohibited in two dimensions are the heavenly luminaries, right? Unless it's a book on astronomy, that's a different story. So I know that makes things complicated. I don't think it refers to the child's drawing, you know, of the sun on the piece of paper that you put on your refrigerator. This created a stir in YU, by the way. If you go to the lobby outside the library lobby, the Nagel's Bagels, whatever it is, when they first finished their renovations and they put up this, it was like almost like a mural. When they first went up, there was the sun. I'm not sure it was technically out there because it wasn't a very good sun, moon, and stars. Over the summer, they were changed. Marshall, you shake your head, and there's a part of me that shakes my head, but it's technically correct. Right? In other words, and then to have this standing up in the yeshiva where somebody shouldn't have done it. I know it's strange, because we look at this and think, what could be wrong with it? But it's one of those...
Don't turn around.
Oh, what's that?
Don't turn around. Turn around.
Literally.
The water.
No, there's no sun, moon, and stars.
Look at the top. Sun.
You know, my Marshall, my running joke is people ask me, I do Avodah Zarah at KJ, but they don't have Avodah Zarah here. Come on. Right,
the reflection of the sun is okay?
We'll talk about it when we get there. We're going to deal with this at some point in the parak, so it comes up about images and so on. Okay.
Maybe this is going to be addressed in the Gemara, but What if you were in the cloisters and saw people worshiping?
So the answer to that would be, if it was not the owners of it doing it, so a person is not oser davar she'eino shelo. A person cannot prohibit something that doesn't belong to them, certainly if they don't make a physical change in the object. Mm-hmm. So that is right. So if you come in and all of a sudden you see this very firm Christian bowing to it, so it would not. If the authorities decided that this should be used for worship, that might be a different question. Okay. So, the truth is, I think in the cloisters anyway, the only question would be the chapel. I don't think the rest of it is not a, it wouldn't even be a shaila. Okay. So anyway, so now the Gemara says as follows. Amar Shmuel. Afilu shivrei avodas kochavim. The Mishnah said shivrei tzlamim. Shmuel says not only shivrei tzlamim. If you find an avodah zarah that was broken, you know it was worshipped, and then you find it smashed, it broken in pieces, Shmuel says it's permissible. So the Gemara says, oh, but v'hanantunan, shivrei tzlamim. It says even shivrei tzlamim. And it would tell us that only shivrei tzlamim, not shivrei avodah zarah. Otherwise, the Mishnah would have told us the bigger chiddush. It's a much bigger chiddush to say if you have an avodah zarah that you know was worshipped, and now you find it broken that it's mutter, kal vachomer an avodah zarah that you don't know whether it was really worshipped or not. So the Gemara says, no. Hu hadin dafilu shivrei avodas kochavim. V'had dekatani shivrei tzlamim. The reason why the Mishnah tells us here the lesser chiddush, mishum dekabay the misnei seifa, matza tavnis yad, tavnis regel, Hare elo asurim imnei shechayotze bohem nevad. So the reason why it has to tell us shivrei tzlamim is not because shivrei avodah zarah asur, but because you have to tell us that a yad or a regel, a broken piece, even though it's only a tzelem, you assume it might be worshipped. In other words, if you had an avodah zarah, if you told us shivrei avodah zarah, kol hamotze avodah zarah shivrei avodah zarah harei elu mutarim, but matza tavdin shadav tavnis regal rei elu asurin mimnei shechayotze b'nevad. So if you had told us that way, we would assume, do you know when a hand and a foot is asur? Only if it was an avodah zarah. Right? In other words, the Mishnah is telling us one leniency and one stringency. So it tells us the leniency, which is the lesser chiddush, namely shivrei tzlamim. It could have told the shiver of the zara, but the problem is, what it really wanted to also get it was that a tavnis yad and a tavnis regel, even a shever right now, shever yad, shever regel, even if it's only of a tselem, not of a rosa, even only a tselem, you have to assume as asur. And had the Mishnah taught the first case by shiver avodah the zara, then I would only know yad and regel as asur when it was avodah the zara in the first place, not necessarily if it were tselem. So you're left with a choice. In other words, the first part of Mishnah teaches a kula, the second part teaches a chumra. Ideally, you want the biggest kula and the biggest chumra to teach us, but because the Mishnah is in parallel, it's got to pick one or the other, so it teaches us, and you might argue so as to not mislead people, if you want to say that. So if you made a mistake here, you'd be machmir on shivrei avodah zarah. But if the Mishnah had been taught the other way, that shivrei avodah zarah asur and are mutter, but yad and regel are asurim, then you would have said, yeah, but a yad and a regel of a regular tzelem, where I don't know whether it was worship, would be mutter. You'd make that mistake. Okay, so that's what Shmuel says. Now, the question still remains. Shmuel doesn't clarify, but Tosos actually claims he's linked to a position on the next page. Is Shmuel's position, what is Shmuel's position about shivrei avodah zarah? Is the assumption that a goy was actively mevatel it? Or is the assumption that if the goy knew it had been broken, then he would have been mevatel it? So what? And which is, in many ways, again, it's not tied to the Yeush question, but conceptually it's analogous. And there's a case of Yeush where the person hasn't had Yeush because they don't know that they lost the object, but they would have Yeush. How do we regard that? Now, we paskin one way there, that Yeush Shlomidas is not considered Yeush. That doesn't mean we have to paskin the same way here. They're two completely different misgarot of halacha. Okay. Fine. So now the Gemara continues. Tanan. Matza tavnis yad. Tavnis regel, hare elu asurim, nesha chayotze bo nevad. Amai, vashvarim ninhu. Why should they be different? In other words, at the end of the day, there could be an answer. The Gemara, but
why is that fragment different than all other fragments?
Correct. Why are these fragments different? Mm-hmm. Why is the shever, if it's broken, if the assumption is that shivrei tzlamim are mutter, for whatever reason they're mutter, based on what we assume, why is the yad and regel different? Vashvarim ninhu. Now, the truth, one of the things, I don't think the Rishonim asked this question, it's a very odd placement. Look what happened. Shmuel, can this question be asked straight out up on the Mishnah? Is this a kasha on Shmuel?
No.
It doesn't seem to be so. Now, the Gemara doesn't say, by the way, ihochi. If you write Shmuel, then hatanan. It's a very strange organization in the Gemara. Because this question, it looks like it's following up on Shmuel, but in reality, this is not a question on Shmuel. You read the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Shivrei Tzlam Amutarim. Motza Tavnis Yad Tavnis Regel. Yeah. Okay, so that's inconsistent with the first half of the Mishnah. Okay, but that has nothing to do with Shmuel's position. So the Gemara doesn't link it that way, but this is the Gemara's question. So the order is very odd. So the Gemara says, Tir Gemara Shmuel. So Shmuel is the one who gives the answer. Ba'om denal besisan. When it's no, it's not a yad or a regel that you find broken on the ground. When you have a yad or a regel, stand alone, mounted on a base. So then, it's usher because people worship that.
It's not a broken part.
Correct. It's not broken. Okay. The best you could say possibly, maybe, is that it's a case where you have a shever, but someone mounted it. So even if that were even if it were a shever, right. Once they mounted it, it's clear that they intended for worship. Okay, the end. So again, I almost feel like there's something. So I didn't see it. Tosos does ask that question. The top Tosos. I'm not going to deal with his answer now. He says, "Vim tomar v'lo mil say d'shmuel nami tikshei reisha l'sefer." You could have asked the very same question. Okay, fine. Now the Gemara presents the following machlokas. Itmar. Avodas kochavim shenishtabra me'eleha. An avodazar that was broken by itself. Rabbi Yochanan amar asura, Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish amar muteres. Rabbi Yochanan says it's asur, and Reish Lakish says it's permitted. Rabbi Yochanan amar asura, the halobatlei, because it's nice that it broke, but he wasn't mevatel it. And Reish Lakish amar muteres, mistama betule mevatelei. So the question is, if you look at the formulation carefully, he doesn't say mistama batle, mistama, presumably he was mevatel, mistama batule mevatel la. That's present tense. Batule is an infinitive, and mevatel is the present tense. In other words, he would be mevatel it. Why? No, he, not the breaking. The guy would be mevatel finu, why? Meimar amar, he would say, ihi nasha lo atzla. It couldn't save itself. Lahu gavra matzlalei. You recognize this theme. You know, this, we learned this from the Midrashim of Avram Avinu and so on and so forth, right? You know, that famous Midrashic version of, you know, Avram smashes them all and puts the hammer in the hands of the biggest of Avodah Zarah and explains to his father that guy killed the rest of them, right? Or one would, you know, a woman would come in and say, you know, I want this Avodah Zarah, and he'd say, you're older than this Avodah Zarah, all these sorts of things and so on. Okay, so that's the theme. So Reish Lakish, but the crucial point here, once you get past the humor in it, is batule mevatelah. Reish Lakish doesn't say he was mevatelah. It sounds like he would be mevatelah. It really sounds like Reish Lakish position is Yeush Shlomidas here, if I may borrow the expression, is considered Yeush in this particular case. Mm-hmm. Okay. What's that? Bittel Shlomidas is considered Bittel. So Eisvei Rabbi Yochanan LeReish Lakish, it's rare that you get a question quoted like this from a Pasuk. V'rosh Dagon Ushtecha Postyodav Krusos Al HaMiftan. Right, when the Philistines took the Aron, so it was bad news for them. So they put it in Beis Dagon, they put it in the house of their God, and they wake up in the first morning, Dagon is on the ground. So they say, okay, so they pick Dagon back up. It's like it's bowing to the Aron. It's bowing to the ark. The second day, Dagon's on the floor, and its head was cut, head and I think its arms maybe were cut off, and they were on the doorstep. Okay, so at this point, so out of that, the Gemara says the practice of the priest of Dagon is they would never step on the threshold. That was the rule. It says it in the pasuk. They're about to quote it. They would never step on the threshold. So you see that it was nishtabra me'eleha, and nonetheless the goyim still worship it, which is kind of funny, because Rabbi Yochanan is not arguing whether they were or weren't mevatel. He's got a better argument. He's saying, you see, they're not mevatel it. Right? The avodah zarah gets broken, and they still worship it. Okay? So now, amar lo, misham raya. Now, the usual reading of Misham Raya is the question. Some say Misham Raya. No. That's the proof, in fact. Why? They started worshipping the threshold. That's why they wouldn't step on it. Right. That's Reish Lakish's claim. I'm not sure that's pshat in the story, but nonetheless, what Reish Lakish says, no. Quite the contrary. They worship the threshold. They don't worship Dagon anymore, because Avodah Zarah, they don't worship. The Amri, the Hachi, They said the following: Shavke Isare leDagon veAsa Isav leAla Miftan. Dagon lost his power, and the power came and rested on the threshold. That's why Dagon was lying on the threshold. Okay, Aseve Hamotze Shivrei Tzlamim Hare Elu Mutarim Ha Shivrei Avodas Kochavim Arasurim. Yeah, here it's obviously against Shmuel. The inference is against Shmuel. Right? The Mishnah says that Shivrei Tzlamim are permitted, not Shivrei Avodas Kochavim. So the Gemara says, Lo Tema Shivrei Avodas Kochavim Asurim Ela Ema Hotzlamim Atzman Asurin. No, in other words, the deek you make is not Shivrei Tzlamim are permitted, but Shivrei Avodas are Asur. No, Shivrei Tzlamim are permitted, but Tzlamim, hold Tzlamim, Shleime Tzlamim are prohibited, right? Which is exactly the inference that Josh made earlier. Hatzlamim Atzman Asurim. Ustama Kin Rabbi Meir. And the Mishnah here, this Mishnah is a Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Meir, the first Mishnah. Right, because Rabbi Meir is the one who said Kalat Slama Masurim. So now the Mishnah says Shivrei Tzlamim Matzah Shivrei Tzlamim Amutarim generically. Right? Okay. Fine. So now the Gemara has a problem for Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan made the Rabbi Meir Nishma Luhu Rabbanon. Lav Amar Rabbi Meir Tzlamim Masurim Shivrei Tzlamim Mutarim. Rabbi Meir's position is that regular Tzlamim are prohibited. Shivrei Tzlamim are permitted. Now let's just extrapolate to what the Chachamim hold. What do the Chachamim hold by regular Tzlamim? They're permitted. If a Chacham hold regular Tzlamim are permitted, but regular Avodah Zarah is Asur. So the Chacham would hold that Shivrei Avodah Zarah is Mutar, like Rabbi Meir holds, that just as Rabbi Meir says that Tzlamim are Asurim because Mistama they're Nevadim, because they are Nevadim, yet Shivrei Tzlamim are permitted. So the Chachamim, those things that are Asur because they are Nevadim, we know that, the Shivarim should also be permitted. That's what they said. So Rabbi Yochanan, if this reading is correct, if this Mishnah is Rabbi Meir, then Rabbi Yochanan, you're wrong for the Chachamim. So that's what he says. So the Gemara says, "Whoa, not so fast." Hachi hashta. What are you talking about? Hasam there. Emar avadum. Emar lo avadum. No, you can't compare the Rabbi Meir Shita. That you can't extrapolate from Meir Chachamim. Why? Because Rabbi Meir would say the following: by Shivei Tzlamim, number one, maybe they didn't worship the Tzlamim. It's possible. Even if they did worship it, Amor Batlum, they nonetheless might have been Vatl because they're broken. But Avodas Kochavim Vaday Avdua. By if you know it was worshipped, then it's definitely Asur. Miyemar the Batle. Who says that the guy was Mavatalit? Ha'ave Safek Uvaday, Vein Safek Motse Mide Vaday. In other words, if you know the Avodah Zarah was worshipped, and now the only question is, was the Goy Mevatel? You have to assume that it's Asur Bana. It's only if it were Suffolk that it worshipped in the first place, and now, even if it were worshipped, maybe it was Mevatel, so then you have a Sveik Sveika. That would be Rabbi Yochanan's defense, that you can't, even though Rabbi Meir permits Shevei Tzlamim, even Rabbi Meir knows that there's an element of Suffolk, whether Tzlamim was worshipped or not. He's Machmir on that, but Shevei Tzlamim is a Sveik Sveika. For the Chachamim, once you get to what Avodah Kochavim Vadai was definitely worshipped, so you can't assume now with one Suffolk that it would be permissible. Yes. Okay. Any questions up until this point? Okay. So the Gemara now is going to go on a brief tangent. It's actually a piece that's almost lifted from another sugya. It's like a little mini tangent to explore the question: is it true that Safek is not Motzei Midei Vaday? It's a very major principle in halacha, generally speaking, which it's basically the principle of chazaka. Right? When you know something was in a certain state and maybe it changed, you can't assume that it changed to either permit something typically or prohibit something. Mm-hmm. So that's the principle of Ein Safek Motzei Midei Vaday. Go.